Welcome to the FASD Success Show, the only podcast where you can get real-world information about fetal alcohol spectrum disorder. This show will help you create calm in the chaos, have hope for the future, and more importantly, save your sanity so you don't lose your flipping mind. Now, here's your host, caregiver turned world FASD educator, Jeff Noble.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to episode 42 of the FASD Success Show. I am your host, Jeff Noble. I am so glad you're here. You know, this podcast is all about creating success, whether you're an individual on the spectrum, whether you are a caregiver or a frontline worker. If you're in the trenches with anybody, this is hopefully the place where you can learn some stuff, get some insight, perhaps a splash of inspiration. You can go on and really kick some butt. Why? Because this is hard. This is hard. If you know, being associated with FASD, you know, obviously being the individual with the hardest, caregiver also hard, frontline worker hard. And so we just hope that this is a place where we can breed that belief in you, that you can get excited about that. And I enjoy it. So I hope everybody's doing well. I hope, you know, meltdowns have been taken away today. I hope that you are not reaching to pull your hair out. I hope that you have gotten a little bit of sleep. I hope that you have been able to at least take 30 seconds for yourself during the day and just take some big, deep breaths. And hey, and if this is that place that you're doing it, oh, I'm so glad you're here, because I get it. The world's a crazy place, but you're still dealing with some stuff, and I want to help you out today. And I'm excited today about our guest, and her name is Natalie Vecchione. I hope I pronounced that right. I'm pretty sure I did. It's a pretty cool last name, not going to lie. And Natalie is an amazing individual. Natalie is going to talk to us about her journey. And every time I hear a parent's journey about trying to acquire supports and resources for the kid, it breaks my heart, but it also gets me pumped up, because the spirit of some of you, a lot of you, all of you, in trying to acquire supports and services, and what you have to do, and the hoops and the multiple doctors, and it is really heroic. It shouldn't have to be, but you do it, and you're awesome because of it. So we're going to hear Natalie's story about her journey and how she came to understanding fetal alcohol spectrum disorder, and now to hosting a podcast and to having many different projects on the go, and to, you know, having a young adult as a functioning young adult doing well. So we're going to talk to her, and then we're going to talk to her about homeschooling, because she's been doing homeschooling for many, many, many years, and how once she learned what she learned about FASD, how she incorporated that into homeschooling as well. This is a good practical podcast where you're going to listen to a down-to-earth a lady who's super cool, who's doing podcasting, who is doing homeschooling, lots of cool things. And so I want to talk to her all about that. It's a great story. So do me a favor. I know this is record time. We're just getting into it, because sometimes you got to know when to just step back and talk less. And this is one of those times, because I think you're going to get a lot from this interview. All right. So other than that, let's head over there and let's talk to Natalie. All right. Let's go. Hey, everybody, here I am. I'm so pumped. You know why? Because this podcast gig is starting to become full circle. It is starting to breed other podcasts. It's starting to have an effect on other caregivers taking the reins and saying, look, if this guy could do it, I can do it. And this is our guest today, other than Natalie Vecchione. Thanks for joining me, dude. I really appreciate you being here.
Thank you, Jeff. I'm thrilled to be here.
Yeah, we were talking before, and you know, I like to get into the journey. You're also a podcaster, and we're going to get into that. But as you know, when I start interviews, I need the origin story. I need to know, because there's always a unique reason why now you're dedicating your life to teaching and training and reaching others about fetal alcohol. So, how did you in North Carolina get involved with fetal alcohol spectrum disorder?
So my husband and I, We built our family through domestic adoption. I was told early on in my 20s that I was not able to have children biologically. So we knew, you know, when we married early that we were going to adopt. You know, it took a while. The process took a while. And we adopted our son. We were living in Philly at the time. And that was in 2002. And he was actually, he had some medical issues at birth. So we were told about that. We did not know much about any birth parents' history. And as he grew, my background in music therapy and rec therapy, working with kids with early intervention, red flags started coming up as he got older, as he grew older. And when he was around a year and a half old, we started seeing symptoms that looked like behaviors to some, but to me, I was like, okay, this is definitely a symptom of something. And even though I had no idea what FASD was, I knew that something sensory was going on. So, and he also had medical issues, so we were thinking maybe it was tied into the medical issues. So at this point, we had no idea that he had any exposure to alcohol during his birth mom's pregnancy. So about, he was about a year and a half old, and he was not sleeping at night, which we know, again, is a big mm-hmm. common, you know, characteristic, primary characteristic of anyone with an FASD. And our pediatrician arranged for us to have a sleep study. And a sleep study with the toddler is an oxymoron. Nobody gets sleep. Nobody gets sleep.
Yeah, that's it.
There's nothing to record because nothing happens, you know. So we went back for the results. My husband came with me, and he was close to two at this point. My son, not my husband, he came back. We went back to the hospital. It was a research hospital, and the sleep neurologist who did our son's study came in with a bunch of residents and a bunch of students. And looked over, you know, the results, and there was nothing. Of course, nothing happened during the results. But he took a look at our son, who was sitting in my lap, and basically said, "Oh, look at him. He's got mild fetal alcohol effects. He's got blah, blah, blah." And he started listing characteristics and everything. And this was the first my husband and I had even heard of this. So we're like feeling like, whoa, wait a minute. Can we rate this? You know, and he just very quickly said, "Oh, it's mild fetal alcohol effects," you know, which again is another oxymoron. There is no such thing as mild fetal alcohol effects.
Nothing mild about it.
Nothing. So, you know, he said, "Put him in early intervention and he'll be fine." And that was it. And there was no documentation, nothing. Like, so what we did was, of course, we signed him up for early intervention, and he did qualify based on his sensory issues and based on, you know, social and different developmental mm-hmm. Challenges. As he grew older, of course, he grew out not needing early intervention. And as he grew older, we put him in a private school, and he always had sensory issues, attention issues, things like that. And the several times things would come up and we would mention, someone once said, you know, this neurologist once said, and again, we used the quote, mild fetal alcohol effects, every single, and we, at the time, we were in Philly. So we went to CHOP, we went to a bunch of other hospitals and well-known specialists.
Oh, no. I was going to say CHOP. You said CHOP. I said, "Oh, it sounds like a steakhouse. What are you doing there?" It's a hospital.
That's right.
Right.
That's right. And one of those acronyms we love. You know, as he grew older and symptoms became more prevalent, again, nobody said anything about alcohol exposure or what was birth mother's history or anything like that. And again, we didn't have anything in writing. So, you know, fast forward later to about, he was about 11 years old, close to 12, actually. We decided to pull him out of regular school. And we decided, my husband and I decided, that it was actually much more feasible for me to stop working and homeschool him rather than find a private school that would be the cost of like an Ivy League tuition.
Wow. Okay. So you covered a lot. Nobody's saying anything, but you're still believing that what this initial sleep neurologist was telling you that, okay, this is what's going on. So are you doing your own research? Are you checking things out? Like, despite the other professionals not mentioning this to you, was that what you're doing?
Yes. So all along I was doing research. When he was in elementary school, I was learning, there wasn't, you know, this was back in the early 2000s. So there wasn't a whole lot of information out there. So I was actually researching more. I read and actually went to trainings with Carol Kranowitz of the Out of Sync Child, which was a great book, by the way. And the Out of Sync Child Has Fun. Did more research in sensory because that's all anybody was giving me. So I didn't really start researching FASD until shortly after we started homeschooling him. I read.
How old was he then?
So he was about 12. Okay. And this was when symptoms were starting to become more mood based. You know, we were seeing self harm, we were seeing depression, we were seeing much more than just the sensory and the ADHD symptoms. We were also seeing some medical symptoms rehashing that we were concerned about.
What happens when you're trying to advocate at this point with a disability nobody knows about, nobody understands, nobody will talk about? Are you just going to the sensory? Are you trying to teach other people about FASD? Or this was before yeah. Homeschooling?
Yeah, so homeschooling, actually, I didn't really start advocating until a few years ago. But at that point, I was advocating more for special needs and sensory, gotcha. Sensory processing, because we didn't have an FASD diagnosis. And any time my husband or I would bring it up, it would just be like, nope, that's not it. Nope, that's not it. Because so many practitioners were under the impression that you have to have a facial characteristic and you have to have all of these symptoms, which our son did not have all of them, you know.
Yeah, girl, don't get me started, man. Don't get me started. So what are you feeling? So how's that feel to be dismissed like that? Like, you're obviously an intelligent woman. You know what your kid, you know, you're an expert on your kid, and you're saying, listen, I think this is, and then dismissed. How are you feeling when that's happening?
So I have to say that it made me want to be an advocate. It made me want to not stop. It actually kind of fueled me. So I really use that as like a spark. To say, I need to learn more and I need to do more, mm-hmm. you know, and once we learned about FASD and once he got the official diagnosis, which was more than 3 years ago, that's when, you know, it blew up from a spark to a bonfire, you know?
So you are pushing. And how old is he now?
So I was pushing, and it's so interesting because I don't believe in coincidence at all. At the time we had just brought home, we had adopted our daughter, who is neurotypical, very different adoption. She was newborn with colic. So, and we were, you know, dealing with our son's symptoms, which were escalating. I read this book, and I'm sure you've read it, Not Exactly as Planned by Linda Rosenbaum.
Uh-huh. And Linda, I know Linda. I went to her, this is not the name drop, but absolutely. Yeah. I went to her book opening. She's from Toronto Island. Yeah, I've had her on the Caregiver Kickstarter, Linda.
I love her.
With her boy. Yeah, with her boy. I've met him.
Who also is a woodworker, which...
He's widowed, right? So what they... Yeah, guys, we're going to plug the book, Not Exactly as Planned, by Linda Rosenbaum. Yeah. She is awesome. This is like way back in the day, mm-hmm. too, before anything happened. The guy had an issue with knives.
Yes.
He had an issue with knives.
Yes.
And so she turned it around and taught, I think his name is Chris, to whittle. Yeah. Cool.
So I read that book. We still didn't have a diagnosis, but I read that book. And again, the red flags are all checking off. And mm-hmm. and I'm like, I showed my husband. I was like, this is our son. And he read it. He's like, absolutely. And in the book, she mentions Trying Differently, Not Harder, and by Diane Malvin, which is, of course, mm-hmm. we all know is like, you know, we call it affectionately the purple book. It's the book you go to. So I read that book. And again, I was, it just like, that was the aha moment. Like, I know I listen to your podcast and I know you like, you know, talk. So that was the, I am a fan. So I, definitely listening to, reading that book and just processing what Diane Malbin said, in addition to what I read in Linda's book, I was like, our son has an FASD and we're not going to stop until we get a diagnosis. So, we actually moved to North Carolina a year later. So, our son's behaviors, his symptoms, behavioral symptoms escalated. We reached out, found a wonderful, FASD, consultant, Kathy Hotelling, who directed us to a psychiatrist who actually knew, was aware about FASD. Unfortunately, our son, we weren't quick enough in getting the diagnosis. Our son was hospitalized, for actually what we learned was bipolar disorder. And while he was in there, we think this is an FASD. We think so. We had the psychiatrist who actually knew, you know, the psychiatrist in the pediatric hospital. And the silver lining of the thing that broke me as a mom, nobody wants your kid hospitalized, you know, nobody wants your kid away from you. But at the time we knew he needed it. And thankfully it wasn't a very long hospitalization. But I remember the day before he was discharged, the doctor called and said, you know, I have his diagnoses. And, you know, the first one was bipolar disorder, which we expected. And it's funny because the second should have been the first one. But he's like, and he has an FASD. And it was actually fetal alcohol syndrome. He actually met the qualifications for FAS. And so, you know, we took that diagnosis and we ran to like the state to get him on the Medicaid wait list and everything, and to, you know, find out what services he was eligible and everything. And when we had that diagnosis, it was such a silver lining. Again, we had to just relearn. We basically had to reinvent our lives to accommodate, just like homeschooling was an accommodation.
I like how you said that.
You know, so we reinvented our lives, and that was the point when we realized we had to focus on strengths. We had to focus on what he was good at. We also had to get him, you know, medication-wise stable, which took a while, but we did. And it was like the movie The Matrix, you know, when you take that pill and everything changes. And that's how it was. And from then on, I was just like, I'm not going to stop. This needs to be shared.
Got it. Now I'm going to Barbara Walters you a little bit, because you said by the time we got the diagnosis, it was too late.
He was 15. He was 15.
But you say it was too late because then you mentioned the hospital. Do you think having a diagnosis would have stopped the hospital visit? And, is that like,
no,
too late is usually associated with some sort of feeling guilty.
No. In retrospect, I correct myself. I don't think it was too late because the hospitalization was a mixed blessing. So, gotcha. You know, yeah, no, I'm glad you asked that. No. And I want to communicate too, that if your child or teen needs to be hospitalized, then that's a reality that as a parent you must do, you know, so mm-hmm. I'm glad you corrected me. Not too late. And you know what? Getting a diagnosis, it's never too late. It is never too late to get a diagnosis. It's preferable that you get one sooner than later so you can accommodate sooner. But getting a.
I always I equate it to saving for retirement. It's always better to start earlier, right? But at least you're saving, right?
That's
so it doesn't matter at what point.
Yeah, that's a great analogy.
Yeah. No, you're welcome. You could use that. No big deal. I'm probably sure someone else came up with it. Anywho, this is interesting because I like that people react two different ways when being shut down by professionals. They feel small, you know, they feel like they're looked over, not educated enough, and it really hurts them. And you said, oh yeah, watch this, right? So it kind of flame the fire. You don't know who you're dealing with, dude. And so you got the diagnosis, you had these aha moments, but you decided to homeschool. So school wasn't working. And then you said, I'm going to do this. What was that decision like?
And this was before the official diagnosis, but this was when the symptoms were starting to get worse. Homeschool, you know, again, I love homeschool because it's a lot like learning about brain-based parenting and FASD, and learning about FASD as a brain-based diagnosis. Homeschooling, there's so many misconceptions about it. You know, people think of homeschooling as like we all wear denim jumpers and we all just do things that are just way, way out of the norm. First of all, it's okay to be out of the norm. It's actually good, I think. And secondly, homeschooling, there's so many different ways you can do it. And I think homeschooling is the ultimate accommodation when it comes to your child's education, because you really tailor the way your child learns to how you're going to give them that information. And our son was and still is a very hands-on learner. So I was able to incorporate that into his education. And I was still able to meet every state in the U.S. and every province in Canada. Homeschooling is legal. You just have to go by what the province or the state's regulations are. So as long as you do that, there's no restriction on how to do it. So the way I was teaching our son math was through, you know, hands-on, you know, fractions doing cooking and, you know, measuring doing, you know, woodwork, which is what, you know, he does now for a living. You know, their homeschooling is so wonderful because you really make so many accommodations. And I like to call them, they're accommodations through the back door. You know, the kid or the teen usually doesn't even realize these are accommodations. They just think this is a cool, different way of learning.
Yeah, you've got them to buy in.
Yep, exactly.
Yeah. Okay, so let me do some spins here, because there's people listening to this that are like, listen, lady, this is all fine and dandy, but it sounds like you wanted to homeschool. I got four kids at home because of the COVID, right? And I'm not a homeschooler. And this is the situation, mm-hmm. not only for parents with individuals on the spectrum, but in neurotypical kids too. So we know that they're worried about meeting these criteria. Natalie, we know that they're worried about holding it together and all the different applications that they have to deal with. And they're worried about, are the kids doing enough? And a lot of times it turns into just fighting to get through a day, and everybody's exhausted and it's not really functional. So what I want to pick your brain is let's put the COVID spin on it and help me help the listeners that are listening right now, saying, give us the goods, ma'am. How do we survive this? And because I know you've given other presentations on this. So please, if you wouldn't mind helping us so that they could have a little bit add to their tools to survive this.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So last month, I did a presentation for Proof Alliance about homeschooling FASD and what homeschooling is versus schooling at home. There's a huge difference. Homeschooling is the parent leads the education and how the child learns best. Schooling at home, which is what a lot of people, probably the majority of people are doing right now in COVID, is you're following the district or the school's rules. So the reason why I think, and many other fellow moms and colleagues who are in the homeschool community think that there's this such frustration, I can't do it, is because you're trying to force school at home, which you can't do. School at home is a temporary solution. Homeschooling really is a lifestyle. Homeschooling, people are, you know, here's a couple of things that people don't realize about homeschooling. Number one, you don't have to all do it yourself. So with our son, we hired a tutor who was wonderful and actually I interviewed her on one of my previous podcasts in working with kids with brain-based differences. So she was really my go-to person for reading and math. So you can outsource. That's huge. There's classes. One of my favorite online resources that I like to use is called outschool.com. They have wonderful classes that can teach your kids in a very visual, kinesthetic way, and they're inexpensive and they're run by teachers. So you can resource. The other thing we did too, pre-COVID was our son, we would go to the local museums and they would have classes offered for homeschoolers. So the first thing is you don't have to do it all yourself. I think there's this fallacy that, okay, you're homeschooling, you're in charge of the entire education. No, because for example, my son's a carpenter. I'm not a carpenter. So obviously when that came along, I outsourced it to his apprenticeship teachers who were magnificent. The second thing that people need to realize too is that you can't do in homeschooling. It's not 6 hours a day at home. It's not. Or
that's what, that's the fear, right? Because they told I could think of dozens of caregivers off the top of my head that are fear. I got to do this for 5 hours. Yep. The guy can't even sit for 10 minutes at once.
So that's why you accommodate like heck and you put sensory breaks. So with our son, we broke it up into three chunks and we'd have a chunk of, traditional learning and then a sensory break and then a meal. And then you also, I just listened to your awesome podcast with the Doherty Dozen with Josh and Alicia. And they said you incorporate snack breaks, you incorporate sensory breaks, you incorporate the things that are going to help them to continue to learn. And the other thing that I learned is that you have to allow a time for decompression. Learning for our kids is challenging because their brains are working on double overtime.
Yes.
So incorporate decompression, not only for people who are transitioning from regular school or COVID school to homeschool. There is that transition period of you need to decompress so they can get out of that and learn that learning is fun again. And then the other thing is learning in the way that best suits them. So I'll give you an example. When we first started homeschooling, I tried to do school at home and I learned quickly that was not going to work. So at the time we were living in New York, we've kind of lived all around the East Coast. And at the time we lived in New York, and this was before we adopted our daughter. My son, very kinesthetic learner, would do our spelling while he was either running or doing the scooter. So at the time I was running, I was training for 5Ks, and I would run, and I am a very slow runner. So he would actually run backward facing me because that's how fast of a runner he is. He's his mile was well under 10 minutes. So, I would drill him. I would be like, okay, what's this? And he would get it on the money because his body was engaged in something. So he was able to access that information. The other thing that I see a lot on different Facebook, online support groups and stuff is that we know, you and I and many people know that there are going to be days that when your child's going to wake up and it's just not going to work. It's not going to work. Yep. And for those, exactly. So what I do is that's just a mental health day. You just let them do what they need to do. For my son, it's dirt biking. And that's one of the reasons why we, hauled from the suburbs and we live on a lovely little hobby farm out in the middle of farm country because that was an accommodation.
No, that was just finish the thought that way. Hold on. Here's okay, because you make a great point. If the light bulb's not on, it's not on. How do you get over the guilt of not, because feeling like, okay, I'm letting them get away with it. That, I should be doing more if I allow this mental health day for not only him, but for myself, for my kids, for myself. How do you switch that mindset into absolutely seeing it, not feeling bad about it, and calling it a mental health day?
Well, if you think about it, many states have usually, ours is 180 days a year. You're supposed to educate. Our homeschool laws say in North Carolina, 180 days. And so do many of the other states. Provinces, again, it all depends. It doesn't say when those days have to happen. So if my son's light bulb is on a Saturday, and we want to do some hands-on learning, I'm going to use that day. Or same thing with another day. The other thing, too, is don't forget, in regular schools, whether they be private or public or anything, there are teacher work days. There are, vacation days. There are days off. So our vacation, our mental health days may sometimes coincide with those breaks, the regular schoolers have. Sometimes they're on our schedule. Again, that's the beauty of homeschool, and that's the beauty of also embracing the brain-based approach to learning, you know.
I do. Now, he graduated?
Yeah, so he graduated this year. He is a carpentry apprentice, and he is actually working for the nonprofit organization that initially trained him in carpentry 2 years ago. It's like a full circle story. He works part-time. It's a supportive environment. And he's also still apprenticing with his second carpentry apprenticeship teacher. He does that 1 to 2 evenings a week. So he's still learning in that effect. And he loves it. It's a transition. So it's some, you know, it's bumpy, even though it's a great transition. It's a transition. Our whole family, we accommodate, we reinvent as necessary. But yeah, he's transitioning now to working as a carpentry apprentice. He loves it. He knows he was meant. This is, you know, he just is such a natural in the wood shop. You know,
how did you find that? You know, we talked about strengths, and how did he stumble? And then did you see him do something well? And then you just said, I'm going to nurture the heck out of this. Did he start and stop multiple things? Like, what was his journey into finding his strengths?
So his journey into finding his strengths was, we always knew he was hands-on. We always knew he was a proprioceptive kid. He was a very tactile kid. And we always knew he liked to work with his hands. He also has, our son has this awesome creative streak, and he actually has a really good eye for detail. So over 2 years ago, there is this wonderful, wonderful organization here in North Carolina called Josh's Hope Foundation. And I'll give you the information if anybody wants to look it up. They train and help young adults and older teens who have a developmental disability and or mental illness. So they have a camp that was open to 16 through 18 year olds, and our son was able to go 2 years ago. And it was basically like an intro camp. So an introduction to wood shop, an introduction to different stuff, you know, culinary, you know, just to introduce older teens to skills. And he really connected with the woodworking. He came home, and I still, to this day, in my kitchen, I have the first cutting board he made me. I've never used it because it's considered a work of art to me. Because that, when he made that and brought that home, it just was light bulbs, all of us, including my daughter, who was like, you know, 3 at the time. She was like, that's what he needs to do. So we converted one of our detached workshops here, you know, where we live, into a wood shop. And we were homeschooling. We're homeschooling at the time. I basically cold called about 50 woodworkers, 50 carpenters in our area. And I said, look, this is what we're doing. You know, our son really wants to learn more. And we connected with his first apprenticeship teacher, who was amazing. And then from then on, we connected with the second one, who he's still with today. And basically that's the journey. We also let him dabble in other
right.
kind of skills. He took a couple of welding courses, which he enjoyed. He took a couple of forging courses. You know, we just let him kind of experiment. He took a small engine repair course, and he really just gravitated towards carpentry and woodworking.
And with his hands.
And with his hands, which we know, again, in that purple Diane Melvin book, there's that list of what I like to call them superpowers. I don't like to call them strengths, because I genuinely believe, and I know other people agree with me, that for whatever areas, you know, in the brain that have been exposed and touched by prenatal exposure, there are other areas that have like this superpower that just lets that person like just shine. you know,
compensate.
Exactly.
So exactly what it does, it accommodates the other brain domains that have been impacted by prenatal alcohol exposure. You're 100% right, man. So that's good. He's doing good. But of course, you know, there's still transition bumps. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just, instead of driving down a regular road, the transition's on a gravel road.
That's right.
The only thing. It's going to take a little bit longer and there'll be a few bumps. And if it rains that day, it's going to be a bit slower, right? Yeah. But you'll get there.
So I just want, and that's another reason why, you know, I'm doing what I'm doing now, like the new ventures we're doing now, because we want people to know that if you're interested in homeschooling and you have a child or a teen that has an FASD, you can do it. I'm actually doing something. I'm collaborating with a good friend of mine, Cindy LaJoy from Blue Collar Homeschool, which I'll give you the information. We're collaborating and just talking about how we did it, because she started a business and was actually voted the best pizza parlor and the best ice cream place in her town. And it's run by her children, four of whom have a diagnosed FASD. And the way she did it was incredible. So I
want to talk to this lady.
She was one of my inspirations in that. Okay, we can take this gravel road, and I love that analogy, because we actually, you know, we live on a farm access road, and you know, around here most roads are gravel. So you take that gravel road, but there's beauty in that gravel road, and it's the gravel road is harder. I'm not gonna, you know, it's harder and it can be challenging. However, just like with FASD, if you embrace that, okay, this is brain-based and that you can focus on strengths and you meet them where they're at, you know, you can do it. I think another fallacy I think that people have about homeschooling is that everything has to be at one grade level. No. The running joke amongst homeschoolers is that if you ask a homeschooled child, what grade are you in? They'll tell you it depends on the subject. And I think that's 100% true.
Yeah.
You know?
Nice, good insight, man, for sure. Yeah, gravel road, I use that. I usually use that to explain audio processing.
Yes.
And the thing is on a gravel road, right, you have to be behind a little bit further than the person in front of you or you're going to get dirty.
Yeah.
Right. You know, that's what happens with our guys. We got to give them some space, you know, or else they're just going to cover you in dirt. The thing I want to know is, so this obviously is a huge passion of yours, and this, I want to see how, rate me on my transition here.
Okay.
Natalie.
Okay.
Now, you obviously, you're connecting with people, you're talking about it, and you know, you mentioned, I don't know if we talked about it on or off the air, I always loved saying that, you wanted to do a podcast, you heard the podcast, you say, hey, I heard this guy, I could do it. What is this new venture? Where did it come from? What are you planning to do? Where do you see it going in the future? Just tell me everything.
Okay. So FASD Hope was just something that, you know, my husband and I really prayed about and just thought about. We wanted to let people know we're still in the trenches. You know, our son is 18 and completed this amazing journey, but it's still, you know, you're still in the trenches. There's good days, there's bad days. First of all, I love podcasting. For me, it's, I learned so much by podcasting. I want to be able to take it on a bigger scale. So that was one of the initiatives behind it. Secondly, I have been working for the past couple of years for these nonprofits and just doing a lot of jobs for three different, you know, organizations, and realized that I just want to do one thing and I want to try to do it really, really well. So that was the second thing. And the third thing was I just really wanted to focus on, you know, things that my husband and I felt like were really important. Like we realized there's not a whole lot of talk about dads in FASD, you know, and support for dads in FASD. You know, we hear about all these awesome, you know, mama bears that are advocating everything. And my husband's like, you know, I want us to be able to talk about issues for dads too. So we wanted to just expand what we're doing on the podcast. Also just offer resources, be able to point people in the right direction. I don't really see us as like You know, an educating and training, but more of, you know, a source for resources, a source for inspiration. And the name FASD Hope is really just what we hope people need to have more in the FASD community. You know, we often, especially early on, when I'm talking like 10 years ago, but it's still, you hear so many things about the negative aspects of FASD and the negative, you know, stories and the negative things. So, you know, that's why we would like to, again, we're not trying to, you know, paint a picture of it's always sunshine and rainbows, but we want to give stories a hope. You know, we want to encourage people having hope. And my friend Cindy from Blue Collar Homeschool said, you know, sometimes you have to have other people carry your hope for you. And that really resonated with me, because I think especially when we're feeling broken and defeated, having somebody who can help carry your hope or say, here's a support, or hey, listen to this, that really makes a difference. So that's what I hope we're doing. You'll find us at FASD Hope 1 on Facebook, FASD Hope on Insta, and our website is fasdhope.com. So,
which is awesome. Let me ask you this though.
Sure.
Cause now we're two podcasters, podcasters in a pod right now. What is the worst? What is not the worst? Your least favorite part of podcasting?
I think for me, all the back end work that goes into it, you know, like, the scheduling and the coordinating the events or coordinating the interviews and everything like that. I honestly enjoy every part of it, and I self edit. You know, I'm a tech geek, so I self edit, and I love editing, which is so funny because it's very time consuming.
Oh yeah, I was just going to say that is my least favorite thing. Audacity, did you have like a file not saved yet?
No.
And then you have to go back and look it up.
I actually use Audacity. Have you had that? I use it. And I actually have had, there's been some, you know, little snags here and there, but I've kind of, you know, it's funny, you know, on a weekend night, I usually do most of my editing over the weekends, you know, when my husband can hang with the kids. So, I love it. I love it because, you know, having a musical background, I think it's so interesting, the whole, you know, just the whole dynamics behind editing and stuff like that. So yeah, editing is actually one of my favorite things. My absolutely favorite thing about podcasting is actually what we're doing now, talking with a guest and learning. I am such a learning geek. And I think that's one of the reasons why I embrace homeschooling, because I always tell my kids, you never stop learning. Even when you feel like you don't want to learn, you're learning something, and learning can be fun. So I just love sitting back. I joke that I'm just the lady who asks the questions, you know. The guests are the real, you know, bread and butter of a podcast. So but my least favorite thing is just all the organization that goes behind it, you know. And just kind of coordinating.
Yeah, no doubt. That. Yeah. There's a lot to go that goes through it. So that's why, like, you know, that's why I reached, you know, you reached out, which was excellent. And I'll reach out right back because I know what it's like. I know how hard it is. And we got to kind of stick together, man.
Yeah.
You know, this is the largest cause of intellectual disabilities on the planet. Yet I'm sure, I don't know, I haven't checked how many autism podcasts there are, but I'm sure there's more than the handful of FASD podcasts. So and we have to share resources and lean on each other and lift each other up, and because there's so much going on, and I'm glad we could do that together, because you're very easy to listen to. I have no doubt that you're a mega awesome podcast host.
Thank you.
I have no doubt you're going to be successful in your venture, just because you got the fire and the smile. So those are all positive aspects.
And I love your podcast because you are so motivational. You are like the cheerleader that just like gets people going. Like, I listen to your podcast not only to be educated, but to be motivated, to say you can do this, to say you got this, you know. I have a confessional. I know you like to say shameless plug, but this is a plug for you, not shameless, but when we first had our son's diagnosis, the way we wanted to educate our family members about it, we used your books. And they were awesome we used the, I think it was the Stop the Madness book. Is that the,
not making sense.
Making sense of the madness.
You're not going to stop it.
You're never going to stop it. Making Sense of the Madness. And then there was another one about like FASD facts. Like you had one that was, that came. And then, so this was years ago. I know it's, they're still out there, but your two books that really were just like great educational, they were education, but they were also, you made it very tangible and you make your, you know, the education about FASD very much, meeting the child, the teen, the adult where they're at. So we actually used those books for our family members and they actually were able to better understand the nature of an FASD. So I want to
say that's awesome.
Your books were very helpful in our journey.
Well, I really appreciate that. And it's just so important to get people on board. It Absolutely. Could be so lonely, so isolating. You feel like you're on an island by yourself. But once you feel immensely better, if there's at least one person that joins you on the island, you know, and then the whole goal of the books is to have the ship come in. So to take you off the island and also know millions of people are dealing with this. You're not alone. We're the actual majority of what's going on here. And so I'm glad there's people like you, you know, and if there's anybody listening to us, like, look at us, you know, we're regular Joes here, Joes and Janes, and you need a microphone and just the will to do it. So if you're ever thinking, man, I would love to do a podcast, we want you to do a podcast. And once you Absolutely. Get your podcast going, if you need any info or advice, you know, you can contact myself. I'm going to put Natalie out there too, if you're looking to get into podcasting, and then you could be on both of our shows and everybody yes. will talk to everybody. And we're here to support you. And we want you to win. We want you to win, whether you're a caregiver, whether you're homeschooling, whether you're just going through a diagnosis, whatever phase, whatever stage. But now we have FASD Hope that's going to, I have no doubt, do what the title says and provide us hope. Natalie, I really appreciate you being here. Will you come back on?
Absolutely. And I would love to have you on my show too sometime.
Oh yeah. Okay. Yeah. If your listeners will allow it, you should poll them and say, you know, we're going to bring this guy on here. I don't want your views, your downloads to go. And we're going to keep checking in with each other. Okay. So we can figure out how we can get more people involved. So keep up the good work, dude. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Thank you so much. And thanks for inspiring me and for so many other people.
Oh, that is so awesome. Thank you so much, Natalie. You're good, man. You know exactly what's going on. I love everything about you. I can't wait. I'm sure Hope is going to do great. Hope FASD. Make sure you guys check it out. Listen to her podcast. Check out the website. All of that good stuff. I just wanted to break a few things down before we got out of here. I am sure her journey at the start might be the same as others, is saying she knew something was off. That's your mom intuition, right? You know something was off. In this case, she figured it was sensory issues, sleep issues, but she didn't know it was a direct result of the disability, because she didn't even know really about the disability. And just how she had to bounce around from different doctors, different areas. And I'm not saying shame on the doctors, because they're just not educated. So how do you plan to deal with something if you don't know what you're dealing with and everything else they're dealing with? So it's just a systematic issue, but it's still a bummer in the summer that you have to deal with that. And you're not taken seriously, or it's not investigated. Even when you do bring the information of fetal alcohol to the doctor, sometimes they just look the other way. So super frustrating. But I do like that the book, Not Exactly As Planned, was the one that helped her. I love Linda Rosenbaum. Look that up online too. I'm going to put that in the show notes. And guess what, folks? You can get the show notes at fasdsuccess.com/podcast, and this would be at the top of the list. So I'm going to put the Linda's
Linda's book in there. Yeah, so she's such a nice lady. She's done great things with her boy, and that's really cool that is the book that she referenced. I really like what she said. She had a good little poignant aha moment for me. She said, we had to reinvent our lives to accommodate the disability. That is tough, and sometimes it's some steps to even get there. We have to dive into a little bit of grief and loss a bit. But basically, she hit the nail on the head when she said that. You have to reinvent yourself. So I like that way of looking at it. That's an uber positive way to look at things. It's a reinvention. It's not like a change or you're taken away from or you're losing. It's just it's a reinvention. So Natalie, I think that was really cool that you said that. And of course, you're going to hear themes even in this podcast when we find out what's working. What was he good at? Focused on his strengths, and you know, build a team around his weaknesses, and find other accommodations to help them with their weaknesses, with their brain domain challenges that were not even their fault to begin with. And then she talks about homeschooling was an accommodation. So that's how it was born. And you know what's funny when she said we don't all wear denim jumpers. She must have some insight into the Canadian culture because we have something called the Canadian tuxedo. Google that and you'll know what I'm talking about. No, wait, hold on a second. Let me Google that first. Honestly, let me Google that first to make sure it's appropriate. Okay, I checked. Totally appropriate. So you'll see what a Canadian tuxedo is. Funny. Denim jumpers. I dig all of it. Okay, just a couple more points. What she talked about was, you know, we talk about buy-in, and she talked about using real-life situations when teaching, when using, you know, homeschooling, because she was saying homeschooling is a lifestyle. I liked what she talked about. She called them backdoor accommodations. So it's when the person doesn't even know they're being accommodated. I think that's amazing, because what she's doing is normalizing it. And because sometimes we make accommodations so outrageous and you know, so loud. So yeah, we make accommodations loud sometimes. So I like the idea of a backdoor accommodation because it's nice, quiet. It's normality, which everybody wants, and that's what we're looking for. So that's a good way to look at it. And again, she talked about the difference between homeschooling and schooling at home. I don't have to get into that because I think she hit all the main points. You don't have to do it all yourself, right? Do it, dump it, delegate it. That's one of the three D's that I go by. And I learned that from, like a Bob Proctor thing. He's like a self-help guy anyways. But I like that. It's a quick phrase. Do it, dump it, delegate it. Use that in your life, and it'll make things easier for sure. But she says you have to allow for time for decompression. We don't often realize that it's our kids are working so hard and their brains are working so hard and they want to do so good and they have only so much focus and so much gas for so much time. They have a smaller gas tank, so they have to stop and fill up. They need the rest stop, right? What do you do at a rest stop? Fill up with gas, you get some snacks, you go to the bathroom if you need to. So just picture that. Picture your kid's gas tank isn't as big as yours. It's smaller, so you got to stop. So I like that, how she talks about doing decompression, using a mental health day as an accommodation, and getting over that issue that the person is giving in, that it's, you know, they're pulling one over on you, that they can if they could, and they will when they can. So that's a absolute mental health day. I thought this was chock full of awesome stuff. You can let me know if you're listening from social media. Let me know what you thought of the show, and just check her out. She should be on your team in your content consumption catalog, because I think she's great. So that is it. What a great podcast. It's good to be in the rhythm again. And if you are listening to this, you know who I'm talking about. If you listen all the way to the end, you know I think you're coolest. You know what? If you listen to the end and you're one of those folks who email me and tell me, listen, I listened to the end. I just want to know I'm getting all the emails and I appreciate it. And you don't even have to say anything else. So if this is you and you listen to all the way to the end, it means you're awesome. It means you're trying really, really hard. It means that you are going to kick some major ass this week. I could feel it. I could just feel it. I know it, because you're ready to rock and roll. You're going to take a big bite out of whatever it is that you need to get done, and it's just going to feel so good. And just chew on it, eat it, spit it out, and move on. And let me know. All you have to do is email me, jeff@fasdforever.com, and say, hey, listen, I listened to the end. And that's it. It's a brotherhood. Like, if we meet in public and all you have to do is say, I listened to the end and you got my attention, you know, whatever you need, I'm here for you. Because you have a hard job, but you're kick-ass. You are a good parent. Don't let others tell you that you're not, because they don't know shit. Okay, I will be back. We got some awesome guests. We do. We really do. And I can't wait to get you to learn, to believe that you could do this, because you can. We could create awesome results, whether you're an individual on the spectrum, whether you're a caregiver or a frontline worker. We got this. I got you. All right, until next time, keep up the hard work. Love you. Bye.